So did you have some close calls of your own?
Oh, no doubt. No doubt.
None that stick out?
What?
None that stick out is...
No, no.
Well, it sounds like losing Bobby Fischer was a big loss for people in Barrow.
Yes, I think it was, yeah. And that, my airplane, 4507 Foxtrot, was Bobby Fischer's and Al Shantz's airplane. And the reason I got it is because when Bobby got killed, why, there was some money owed to Cessna Finance Corporation, and about $9,000. And Jess Bachner offered to buy the airplane and pay about $6,000, and he was the only bidder. So Al Shantz come to me, and he knew I had a 180, and he said, you can just have that airplane if you'll just pay off Cessna Finance Corporation, which I did.
Yeah. That was Bobby's personal plane.
Well, he used it in his business.
Oh.
He had his own business when he got killed.
Oh, he wasn't flying for NARL at the time?
I think he was flying his... He got killed in an Aero Commander.
Oh, I thought he was flying for NARL.
No, he was in his own...
But he started in Barrow flying for NARL, and then he...
He started in Barrow flying for Jim McGoffin at Interior Airways.
Okay, and then he got hired at NARL for a while, and then he started his own business.
I tried to get Al Mosley to hire him for Weems,
mm-hmm.
you know, and Al said, well, we'll take Frank Gregory, we don't need, but they should have hired Bobby.
He was a good pilot?
Yeah, Bobby was a good pilot. Yeah, what killed him was he didn't have a hangar, and the airplane sat out, and it was a charter that was worth a lot of money, and in fact, there was one too many passengers. So one of the guys sitting in the very back didn't have a seatbelt.
Oh.
And what they burnt the engine, that engine up on the ground, because it was packed with snow, and they couldn't, and they heated it, but they couldn't, it really wasn't heated properly, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And when he took off, the engine failed at about 400 feet, and rather than mm-hmm. just pull the power back and land on his belly on the tundra, he tried to turn around, and he stalled the airplane, and it went straight in on his nose. And the one guy in the back that didn't have no seatbelt on, he flew forward and broke his leg, and he was the only one that lived.
Oh my, I didn't know all that. I guess I always assumed it was icing or something.
But it was okay. It was just...
It was the packed snow problem.
Didn't have a hangar. It was a state charter.
So the pressure to go.
Mm-hmm. The money pressure to go.
Right,
you know.
Right.
They were going all the way to Inuvik.
Oh, that's... Yeah. So you worked for Ween. Did you ever actually work for... NARL as a pilot, or you just worked the charters?
I just worked the charters.
So you worked. So how long were you based out of Barrow for Ween?
We were there in the spring of 59 when Renee had Margie, and we got married in 58. Renee got pregnant about Christmas time. And Margie was born in September of 59. And we went back to Barrow that winter. And that next spring, we came to town and stayed at the Smith Apartments for a while. And then we bought that house in Island Homes.
So that would have been 1960. Spring of 1960,
yeah.
You came to Fairbanks.
Yeah.
Okay.
To fly Twin Beach for Jim, for Weens.
Okay.
And Norseman. And
did you continue to go up and fly flights out of Barrow? Or to Barrow? Or?
Well, I flew the Dew Line and the F-27 starting in 70.
Oh, okay.
But then when we started building the pipeline, we had bought five 227s, which were just bigger F-27s. And I was see if that picture was there, but that's just some kids out there in the snow machines. Then I had such good duty, I could have started flying 737 co-pilot But I was flying 3 days a week. I'd go to work at 6 o'clock in the morning or 5:45. And this is starting in 74. And I would make two trips to the north side of the pipeline. And I'd get 84, 85 hours a month. I worked Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, got through at about 7:30 every night, slept in my own bed every night, and made the maximum. I got the maximum overtime. Mm-hmm. So, but then the handwriting came on the wall in 75, in late October, November, a bid came out for 737 captains, and I bid 737 captains. And I was almost 45 years old, and I gave it my absolute best shot, and it took my best shot.
Flying a 737 is much different?
Well, flying the jets is a lot different than the stuff I'd been flying.
Is it?
But then when I went to 727, it was easy because I'd been flying a 737.
Right. So then you flew 737s for Ween?
And 727s until I flew into 85 flying 737s.
So 85 is when Ween closed down?
Yeah.
Okay. And so that took you all over the state?
Took me lower
48 too?
Yeah. Yeah, we'd go Anchorage, Seattle, Boise, Salt Lake City, Phoenix, and then be there in Phoenix for about 27 hours, and then go back Salt Lake City, Boise, Seattle, and then go to Denver, and be in Denver from 11 o'clock until 4:30 the next afternoon, and then come back to Seattle, and then come back to Anchorage. Trips like that.
Uh-huh. So how do you feel about those years in Barrow?
Oh, they were interesting. I goofed my ankle up on a blanket toss.
Oh.
I had light rubber boots on instead of having boots on, and I got flipped off the blanket and whacked my ankle.
And I
was flying in and out of that Norseman, flying it, and I'd step on the right pedal with my left foot. But I flew it good.
And now, did your wife have your daughter in Barrow, or just she came down to Fairbanks?
She, Margie was born at St. Joseph.
Oh, here in Fairbanks.
Yeah.
All
four of the daughters were born.
I was wondering what the hospital medical care was like in Barrow at that time.
It wasn't as good as it is by later years later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, at Ween, when you were in Barrow, were there any people working for Ween based out of Barrow at that time?
Yeah, Waldo Nimrod Bodfish was working for Ween's. Forrest Solomon, he was a station manager.
Forrest Solomon Sr.?
Senior. And then Eve Wheeler, when Forrest got into some kind of trouble with Sigurd, and Eve Wheeler, who was a gnome boy, he came up and ran a station for a while.
Oh, and you said that the radio operators were Molly...
Avakana. What's her name?
You mentioned Emily.
Emily Apollick.
Right.
And Bernays' cousin,
Alberta F. Lord.
Alfreda Lord.
Alfreda.
And what's her name? One that's married to. She gave us a picture out there. Bernice Vanderpool. That was Bernice Albert was her maiden name. She's from Tanana.
Vanderpool. They're out on the Kuskokwim.
They're down on the Kuskokwim.
Yeah, George...
she was married to Joe Vanderpool for a while.
Okay.
Now she's married to a guy by the name of Aragon.
But okay. They were all radio operators in Barrow?
Mm-hmm.
I always thought Molly was a stewardess. I didn't know she was a radio operator.
Yeah, she was a radio operator.
And then did Renee work for Wien also while you were there? Or?
No, but Renee worked for Wien Airlines when she was going to Mount Edgecombe. When she, Bud Hagberg, who was, he brought Renee and Bernice Albert and some other girl up. And Bernice became worked in the radio. And Renee was a switchboard operator. Hmm. And that had to be around 52, 53.
Hmm. And that was here in Fairbanks?
Here in Fairbanks.
Oh. It sounds, I mean, I don't know very much about Wien Airlines, but I know a lot of native Alaskans who worked for them.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed like they hired a lot of the native people.
Yes, they did. Yeah.
And was it a good company to work for?
Yes, very good. A lot of esprit de corps.
Yeah, what made it such a good place?
Well, I liked the way that people treated you, you know.
So why did they go out of business?
Because a corporate raider came along and transferred all the money into his company and said they went broke.
No, I see.
He looked at the value of the stock, and he looked at the value of the company. And the stock was $6.50 a share, and the actual value of the company was about $14 a share. And he was a banker and a lawyer and a crook.
Okay. Is that the guy who did Mark Air? No, it was separate, different.
That's different. But no, he ended up with a share of Mark Air, too.
I didn't know that if it became Mark Ayer or what.
No. Neil Burke was... Well,
that was Mark Ayer.
That was Mark Ayer.
Yeah, that's the name I heard of.
Yeah.
Did you ever... I mean, you were friends with people in Barrow and with the Nupiat people. Did they ever talk about Narl and what they thought about the place?
I never heard very much about it, you know. I know poor Al Shantz, he had one of his daughters and... Which one was it? Joycey, I guess, the youngest one. And she went and stuck her finger in a cage with a wolverine, and the wolverine came and took the tip of her finger off.
Uh-oh. That wasn't so good.
And she was about 6 or 7 years old when that happened.
Oh. Yeah, I'm just curious. Yeah, people... talked about it or what they thought about the place or...
Yeah. Like I said, winters were pretty tough there before the natural gas.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't too much fun.
No. Well, and you knew Max Brewer. What was he like?
He was okay, yeah. Max was fine. He wanted you to do this and that. He wanted you to... What he said to do, he expected you to do it.
Mm-hmm. And that sat okay with you, or was that a problem?
No, that was no problem. But we didn't work for him very much, just a little bit of charters.
Uh-huh.
One night, Andy Anderson was flying, had a 180 on floats. And they didn't have a 180. I just had a 180 on wheels at that time. Maybe I had a Norseman, too. And they came up and... Andy Anderson went to the hotel and went to bed, and I flew the airplane all night. It was like in July. And what we did, we landed and took a whole block of those lakes just to the east and to the south of Barrow. And we landed in lake after lake after lake and just taxied along slowly. And they had a lead weight with a rope on it with different, and they were checking the depths of the water, and then they would take water samples and stuff. And that country, if you take a topo map of 1960 and take it a photograph topo map of mm-hmm. today, those lakes have moved a lot.
Yeah,
because of the wind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, The northeast wind blows, and it beats them down on the southwest end, and builds up.
Right, and they're drying up on the other end. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. So some of the charters, then you were flying the scientists, where you mentioned flying those Forrest and Henry out. So you would go and drop scientists and their native guides off, but you didn't usually stay out there with them?
No, I didn't stay out there. Like when we went to Teshapuck Lake, I stayed with them while they were collecting samples. And when mm-hmm. we went to Schrader Peters Lake, I stayed with them, you know. But, you know, it was, they were collecting samples for half a day, and
right.
I just stayed right there with them.
Mm-hmm. So did every scientist that you took out, did they always have a native assistant with them?
Generally. I think they, with Henry Childs, they took Forrest Solomon Jr. just so that he wouldn't get in trouble. You know?
Well, that's what Max Ovey said, that he sent local people to make sure those scientists didn't get in trouble.
Yeah, Henry Childs grew up in Los Angeles. Right. He yelled about surviving on the Pit of McGee.
Right. Yeah. And as they say, that was always Max's angle, but I didn't know if Max was always involved or not, or mm-hmm. how it worked.
He took a pretty active part in it. You know.
Tell me about Peters Lake, Schrader's Lake. I've heard about... Well, there was a camp there, wasn't there?
Yes, the U.S. Coast and Geodetic Service had a camp there. And we dropped an airplane, a C-46, through the ice there and saved it.
You dropped it not on purpose?
No. I went up there and drilled the lake. And this was about the 30th day of May. Because I'd been told to go up and drill that lake. And that was in 57. And I went up there and drilled it. And it was where there was no drifts. It was 52 inches deep. The ice wasn't where there was a drift, little small drifts. The ice was 50 inches deep. And they didn't get around to making this charter until about the 12th day of June. And by that time, that creek coming in from the south on Peters Lake was running a lot of water. And what it was doing is that warm water, it grows right up against the ice underneath and cuts the ice. And they taxied in, and I was just shutting down, and the main gear fell right through the ice. And of course, they unloaded the airplane, and they were just going to forget about it. And the insurance company told them, well, if you're going to, your insurance is going to go up about three times if you don't save that airplane.
Mm-hmm.
So then they made an effort to save it.
So how did you get it out?
They flew up there with C-46 with empty 55-gallon drums and filled the airplane completely full of empty. Then they took all the radios and instruments out of it and the controls off of it and put them in a safe place on the land and got a cable on the tail wheel and made a dead man and got... So they had a cable on the airplane. When, mm-hmm. when the ice broke up, they were able to pull the airplane backwards up. So it was just out of... The gear was in the water, but the airplane was basically out of the water. And then, when all the ice was gone out of the lake, early in the summer, Rex Avicanna and Richard Weed and somebody else was up there, and they towed that airplane with just like a 10-horsepower outboard to this little spit between Schrader and Peters Lake, where there was about 2,000 feet where they constructed a runway and got the airplane up out of the water and changed the propellers and got it all put back together and ran it and made sure that it was all airworthy. And then in October, Dick King and Al Mosley went up there and Dick King told Mosley, he said, when you think the wind is strong enough, and the wind was up to about 40 miles an hour in gusts, and Mosley said, it's strong enough now, Dick, and they laid the whip to it and got the airplane in the air and got it to top. And they took it down to Vulitan in Long Beach, California, and had it overhauled.
Wow.
So and that poor airplane, Cliff Everest, got it from Wien Airlines. Mm-hmm. And he was chartering it to Coghill in Anchorage, in the Nana. And they went into Tobin Creek, up out of Chandler Lake, Chandler Lake. Mm-hmm. And they hit a big boulder and blew a tire and its turn, and the co-pilot got kind of banged up in it, and the airframe is still laying up there.
Hmm. Yeah, it's amazing how they got it out. So when it fell through the ice,
it just was sitting on its belly.
It was just sort of hanging there.
Yeah. Hmm. And filling it full of the 55-gallon drums kept it, so it went down in the water, and it got the...
That's kind of floated it.
Floated it. Helped keep the air in it so it wouldn't sink.
Very smart. It sounds familiar. I was friends with Rex, so I'm sure he must have told me about that, because it sounds kind of familiar.
Mm-hmm. Well.
Yeah.
I liked Rex. He was a good guy.
Yeah. He was a mechanic here for Wien.
I used to let him... I'd let him fly like the Twin Beaches. Mm-hmm. He could fly the airplane pretty good.
Yeah, it sounds familiar. I think I remember him saying he got to fly.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize that was with you.
Yeah, he got to fly with me a little.
And then Sam Hobson is somebody else I know who used to work for.
Yeah, he primarily worked in Fairbanks.
Yeah.
Here in a cargo.
And he was a cargo handler.
Yeah.
A loadmaster, is that what they call those guys?
Yeah, I guess so.
I don't know.
In the military, you call them loadmaster.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Just cargo people here.
Uh-huh. Well, what other things about your flying in and out of Barrow or for your thoughts about Gnarl that you might have?
Well, I don't know. I know that Bobby sure made some long trips in R4Ds and, over Bound Bay and all over out there, Ellesmere Island. And he flew a lot out there.
Yeah, well, those ice islands got pretty far away.
Yes, they did, yeah. And yeah.
So with Wien, you didn't support those ice islands?
No, just that one trip I made for Gnarl.
That must have been pretty exciting to go land out on an ice island.
Yeah, single engine airplane.
Yeah. What kind of runway did they have?
Just the ice. It was fairly smooth.
It was fairly smooth?
Yeah.
Because, I would think that ice and the just light right, you wouldn't see a little hummock of ice, and that you'd hit that, and that would be that. But
no, it was pretty smooth on top.
Mm-hmm.
So they got building stuff there, and then of course, they got different melting rates,
Right. But when you went out, there wasn't much going on the island yet?
No, we hadn't done much yet there. They had one of those frame tents.
Oh, yeah, like a James Way.
Like a James Way hut or something like that. They had a couple of them, but that's about all that was there.
And why did you guys go out? Why did you go?
Max wanted to take him supplies and get those two people that were out there.
Oh, okay.
And he didn't want to send Bobby out with one airplane.
Right. So it was sort of a shift change?
Yeah, maybe something like that.
Cool. Well, it sounds like you've had quite a number of adventures in your long career.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You were lucky to get to fly up there in those early days.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Well, I was lucky to get to fly for Alaska Coastal, too. That was pretty interesting.
That was out of Juneau or Ketchum?
It was out of Juneau. Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty interesting.
And get to meet a lot of people, probably, as a pilot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was kind of the nice thing about it, is, especially when you flew Bush, you got to know people all the time.
Yeah. So, flying out of Barrow, you got to know people there and in the villages.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I appreciate your time.
Okay.
Unless you have other particular stories that I haven't gotten out of you, you may have your set stories about certain things.
Yeah.
I might not know to ask about.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I guess that's enough for today.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You betcha.